Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we'd like to welcome everyone to RD People, Health and Wellbeing conference call to discuss these second quarter results. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.rd.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find the slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period, and at that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for reaching an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of RD management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they are related to future events and therefore depend on the circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of RD and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us, we have Mr. Eugenio de Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now I will turn the floor over to Mr. Eugenio Zagottis. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Raízen Brasil conference call. I will start by apologizing because Marcinho, unfortunately, could not join us today as he's traveling abroad for the company. But here we are, Gabriel and I, available for you. So I'd like to start by saying that this was an excellent quarter for the company. After 2 years posting mature store comps below inflation, or even negative in the case of last year, we were very successful in this quarter, and we were finally able to beat inflation. And overall, this translated in better margins, better working capital, and all the sort. So we ended the quarter with 1,917 stores all across Brazil. We opened 47 stores and closed 3 stores in the quarter. Our market share reached 1.6. We had a market share gain of 1.6 percentage point, with 2 points of gain in São Paulo. Our revenue reached 4.4 billion, 17.1% of growth, which I think is a very good number for the company, with 4% mature store sales growth. We posted a gross margin of 29.1% below the same quarter last year. And finally, we had an EBITDA of 363.7 million, an increase of 14.9% with a margin of 8.2%. I will only comment on the previous accounting criteria. I'm not referring to the presentation to the IFRS numbers, although they are here for whoever is interested. We had total net income of 160.5 million, an increase of 13.2%, and a 3.6% net margin. And finally, we generated a positive free cash flow of nearly 43 million, with 53 million of total cash consumption in the quarter. On page 4, we can share more details about our expansion. So we ended the quarter with 1,917 stores. Through this year, we have opened 109 stores, and we have closed a total of 17 stores. If you look at the quality of the growth, I think it has been very good. As you know, we generally shoot for marginal internal rate of returns around 20%. Whenever we calculate where we are for stores open in the last 12 months, we're generally somewhere between 17 and 20. If we look today's figures, we are 20.1, 20.2%, something like that. So we are in the up area of the range. So very consistent performance, and again, this is net of cannibalization. Finally, we ended the quarter with 34.7% of stores still in maturation, versus 65.3% mature stores. So there is more growth momentum contracted from maturation. Page 5 is probably one of the most important charts in the deck. And I think this explains what's happening in the market and why we have been able to improve our comps so dramatically. So obviously, we have seen through 2017 and 2018 a cycle of very intense store addition by competitors. Obviously, 17 was even stronger than 18, but these 147 stores opened in the third quarter 17 and 166 opened in the 4Q 17, I mean, these stores, they affected only part of 17, but they affected dramatically 18. So when you put these stores opened by year-end in 17 with the number of stores opened through 18, which were lower, but still a significant number, I mean, obviously, this excess of competition affected our comps and we posted negative mature store sales. As we enter 2019, it's very clear that we see a huge reversion in terms of industry cycle. So we see now way less store openings, and we see way more store closures, which basically is a correction of mistakes made. While on our side, we maintain a very consistent growth pace. So I think this chart underscores the fact that there are very high regional entry barriers in this market that can be underestimated, and the complexities of delivering an accelerated growth program that really creates long-term value for the company, and as we have done. But it's not an easy thing to be done, as the reversion of this bubble clearly shows. And then when we look at the chart in the upper part of the page, I mean, our growth is starting to decouple from the other place. This is all Abrafarma data, so this is only about the large chains. This is not about the full market. But this is really the most relevant comparison to be made. So we see that Abrafarma keeps posting lower growth, and we are accelerating. So our performance is decoupling from the market, and in the end, this means market share gain by the company. So on page 6, we can talk more about this. We'll start on the right side of the page. So in terms of share gain, we reached 13% national share, 1.6 percentage point share gain in 1 year. This is a record gain. This is the highest number ever reported by RD since the merger in 2011. And I think that the even better is the fact that we gained 2 percentage points in share in São Paulo, our main market, and probably the market that saw the biggest pressure in recent years. We have gained market share in every single market, but I also like to point to our 7.9% share in the Northeast, which is already in line with South and close to the Southeast. Not to mention that we have a huge growth momentum here because most stores are not mature yet, and we have a lot of new stores coming. And the fact that we recently entered in the North region, with 3% market share already, and we'll see way more growth here as well. When we talk about São Paulo, as I previously mentioned, this is even more interesting. If you look at the bottom of the page and you see that our share of São Paulo in the total expansion has been declining in a very steady pace. So São Paulo in the 1Q17 used to represent nearly half of our openings. It now represents only 27.6% of our openings. If you think in absolute numbers, we used to open 100 stores a year. We are now opening 67 stores last 12 months. Still, with less growth in a more benign market, our share gain has accelerated, as I mentioned. Then when we look in the left part of the page, I mean, it's clear that we already have a pretty national presence. I'd like to highlight that we already have 28 stores in Pará, and we open more. We are entering Amazonas, the city of Manaus. This is not an easy entry because there are no freeways into Manaus, so we have to ship by air, which is expensive. So this is a higher execution risk proposition. We will open a more conservative number of stores to begin with, and then we'll see where it takes us. So in addition to that, I also like to point to the fact that we already have more than 230 stores in the Northeast, nearly 1,000 stores in São Paulo. And when we think about our growth, The Northeast has been until now a very significant portion of the program. And almost every year we have a new state, or every cycle of 2 years, a new state taking a lot of stores, like Bahia early on, and then Pernambuco, and then Ceará, and more recently Pará. When we look forward, I mean, there's no new market in which we can come and open 20, 30 stores from scratch in a single year. So this means that our expansion will be more distributed than it has been until now. And the fact that when you look, for example, markets like Porto Alegre, Belo Horizonte, Rio, we are much better off now there than we were in the past. So this market can take more stores than before. So this is allowing us to maintain a significant growth base moving forward. On page 7, talking about revenue growth, we posted a consolidated revenue growth of 17%, with 16.7% for our retail business and nearly 25% for bio. When we look at the mix, the largest growth was in OTC, 18.8%, with 40 bps gaining the revenue mix. But for me, the most impressive performance is really in generics. We grew 18.2%, so slightly below OTC. But let's remember that we made very, very significant price investments here, starting the second quarter of last year. I think second Q and third Q last year were really the peaks for margin investment. So when you look today at generics, our average price is not growing with inflation yet. It's actually below zero. But the volume growth has been so dramatic that the overall figures are already good. As we move forward and as the comp base, the tough comp base fades off, well, this means that generics will be the fastest growing category in the coming quarters. But I also like to point that the performance has been consistent all over, with 17% growth in HPC, 15% growth in branded. On page 8, we talk about the comps here. So for the 17% total growth was driven by same-store sales growth of 8% and mature-store sales growth of 4%. This represents real growth as we bet an inflation of 3.4% to generate 0.6% real growth. So I think this is a big number for the company. This is an improvement that we expected to see by the end of the year, and we're happy to see that it already happened in the second quarter. And this is even more impressive because when we break month by month, April was a challenging month. April was not an easy month for us, but May and June were really, really outstanding months, and we see the momentum maintaining as we enter the third quarter. So we were very optimistic, and we believe we will post more real growth this year and very likely next year. On page 9, our gross margin totaled 29%. This represents a 10 bps pressure. This 10 bps pressure came from 4Bio, which grows faster with a lower margin, which means that the retail margin was flat. But let's remember that this is the quarter in which we post inflationary gains on inventories, and this year's price increase was higher than last year's. So we have a 40 bps margin gain by through the fact that the price increase was higher. So this is a cyclical gain. This is a seasonal gain, sorry. And this seasonal gain was consumed by 30 bps commercial pressure, which is a reflection of the price investments undertaken net of other commercial gains like trade allowances and so on. And then we have 10 bps of net present value adjustment. But the challenge that we have is that in the coming quarters, there will be no price increase. And here, we will carry some kind of gross margin pressure, as we already see here, because of the commercial initiatives undertaken. The excellent sales momentum also translated in a cash cycle reduction. So our cash cycle is nearly one day lower today than the same day last quarter. This is a nice reversion following several quarters of pressure, even though earlier on we had massive reductions. But retail is a very simple business. If you sell well, the expenses will dilute well, cash cycle will behave well, margins will be great, and if you don't grow, it's the opposite. So growth is the most important driver, and everything comes in place when growth is delivered. of page 10, talking more about expenses. So our total operating expenses represent 20.8% of our revenues. So they were flat. For bio, diluted 10 bps, retail pressure 10 bps. And the main sources of pressure were rentals because of the IGPM ahead of inflation. The IGPM is already coming down, but over the last 12 months, it's still more than inflation. So it represented a 20 bps pressure. And finally, there is a self-inflicted pain here of logistics. Let's remember that we are opening this year three new DCs. So there's one is a relocation. So we closed our DC in the countryside of Rio, and we are now opening the DC in the metropolitan region of the city. This will entail a very nice freight gain next year, because we are shipping from the countryside all 130 plus stores, and now we'll start shipping from the countryside. Sorry, we're shipping from the countryside, now we'll start shipping from the metropolitan region. So it's 1 hour less transportation time and cost. But because we have three DCs coming all at once, because Guarulhos, São Paulo is our main, the largest company DC, they're already booking fixed costs. So we now see logistics pressure, but I think we will have good news next year from freight. And finally, I think we diluted 10 bps in labor, as we had high operating efficiency here. Several other lines, like acquiring fees, for example, another 10 bps, new store performance, another 10 bps. On page 11, this resulted in a total quarterly EBITDA of 364 million. This is 14.9% EBITDA growth. So regardless of what happens in the margin, which is a 20 bps pressure, our absolute EBITDA grew 15%. So I think this is a very good quarter by any means. When you think about net income on the next page, net income increased by 13.2%, also a very solid performance, with a 10 bp margin pressure. We booked in the quarter nearly 14 million of non-recurring expenses, and the bulk of this is related to the relocation of the Bahamansa distribution center and to consulting advisory and restructuring expenses, most of which were related to the Onoff acquisition that I'll talk more in detail by the end of this presentation. On page 13, we see that we posted positive free cash flow generation. This is also a result of lower cash cycle investments than we made last year, also higher level of resource from operations. So positive free cash flow and somewhat negative total cash flow, 53 million. But this is mostly driven by interest on capital, interest on debt, etc. So when you look at our share price, obviously the long-term performance is very good, 26% internal rate of return for whoever invested in our IPO. But when you look in the year, the share price has grown 33% against 14.9% for Bovespa. So we're very happy for having generated alpha for investors. Then on page 15, summarizing what we did in the quarter before we move to the on-off acquisition. So this was a quarter of very solid revenue growth, strong market share gains, and which points to positive momentum ahead. We still see, as we enter the third quarter, the mature stores delivering really well. And I think this will sustain this coming to the next quarters. Market share gain, again, 1.6 percentage point. I mean, I think it's a big number. This is related to a combination of things. This is related to the fact that the capacity addition in the market has reverted. The bubble is now being cleaned up, so this is one thing. We never had a more competitive price positioning than we have today, driven by generic investments, but not only generic. Generic was the main line, but we also invested in branded and even somewhat in OTC. So we have a competitive price today, as I think we never had in the recent past. And also the fact that we have done an expansion which has been phenomenal, which has been delivering very strong marginal returns. It's a fast expansion, but it's a high quality expansion that creates long-term value. Then when we think about margins, I mean, obviously the gross margin was very good in the quarter, flat for retailing, driven by the seasonal effect from the price increase. So we have a gross margin pressure for the next quarters. But also it's very good to see that we maintain expenses nearly flat. As we sold, as mature stores performed really well, I think we started reverting the loss of operating leverage we observed in previous quarters. So as we maintain a good growth momentum, I mean, we may see operating leverage coming forward. This has more to do with sequential improvements from where we are than with the comps per se, because the current expense level represents a certain level of revenues, a certain level of revenues per store. If our comps increase just because of the comp base, I mean, that doesn't change. But if we get sequential increases, then maybe we can see more margin dilution that may or not offset the gross margin pressure we should face. And finally, when we look ahead, we are very optimistic because of the growth momentum, because of our competitivity, as I mentioned. I think I have also to mention that we are progressing really well along with our digital strategy. We still see very early promising results. You know, frankly, I don't think they are an explanation as of yet for the performance we had, but I think we have a very rich pipeline, and these efforts will start combining to start driving our numbers ahead, and this should be another source of competitive advantage. This should increase our edge versus our main competitors, not to mention that it should dramatically improve the customer's shopping experience by removing pain points, especially in the pharmacy counter, but not only in the pharmacy counter. And this should translate in a much higher engagement for customers, really being able to not only being a retailer which deliver medication, but being a partner in promoting healthcare, promoting prevention, driving adherence to the treatment, healthy habits, and I think with an app we can do this very effectively. So we want to have a broader role in healthcare. We are a traditional retailer who sells a healthcare product. We want to become a healthcare provider who retails. And finally, I think we have good news for expenses coming forward. As I mentioned, freight dilution from the Rio relocation and also from the CRADC, which will reduce transportation distances to the north, and also in utilities. We are preparing the migration of up to 1,700 stores to renewable and distributed energy generation. So according to the pilots we have done, we could save 20% of electricity costs in those stores. It's difficult to generalize what it means for next year because we have to understand how fast or slow the rollout will be. The other thing is that the 20%, this relates to stores that were piloted, depending on the region where the stores will be rolling out. It could be higher, could be lower, but the direction of where utility expenses will be going, for me, it's clear. Okay, moving to Onofre now, page 16. So this is obviously, this obviously didn't happen in the quarter, so this is subsequent information. We concluded the transaction on July 1st. So July 1st, the company became officially ours after CADE's approvals and other stuff. And then we had a general assembly on August 1st to approve the legal incorporation of Onofre. So we got the approval. We had the legal incorporation taking place in the same day, which means that Raia, Drogasil, and Onofre become a single legal entity. So this is very important for us to proceed with the integration. What this means is that next quarter, the July financial statements, they will be consolidated. But from August onwards, the numbers are part of the numbers that we'll be reporting. We don't need consolidation. There's no consolidation to do here. So let me talk about our integration strategy here. What we're doing, we are transferring every Onofre remaining asset to our platform. All the stores are migrating to the Raia Drogasil platform. The e-commerce business will be migrating for the Raia Drogasil platform. This means cost savings, this means more efficiency, this means better operation. We're also optimizing the store portfolio, which means closing stores which are redundant or which we believe will not be able to create value. We're rebranding every single Onofre store as Raia or Drogasil, depending on where the closest store is and so on. We have technical criteria to decide on which brand, but Onofre will survive only as a pure play e-commerce brand. There'll be no physical stores anymore. By leveraging the Raia Drogasil scale and structure, Onofre will become a price leader in the market, playing at a national level, no longer only in São Paulo and a couple other states, and being able to do faster local deliveries in every single market. I think we can really change the dimension of Onofre. Onofre is already the second player in the industry. Onofre more than doubles our digital e-commerce sales. The fact that we have to absorb Onofre means that we're already preparing our stores to assume the logistics of Onofre. Store the DC, which today is done by the Onofre DC, which will be shut down. This structure allows us also to accelerate neighborhood deliveries for Raia Drogasil. We have one-hour delivery pilots, and we should certainly expand on that. Onofre will help us here. We have a very clear integration schedule. A lot has already happened, and the rest should happen in the coming months. As I mentioned, we consummated the transaction on July 1st. Already on July 7th, we closed eight underperforming or redundant stores. There will be more stores closed, but right now we need to operate them as Raia Drogasil to understand what the potential is and which stores can survive or not. On August 1st, following a general assembly, we have already migrated all the 42 surviving stores to our DIS platforms and structures. We have fully absorbed the Onofre staff, blended them with our store teams. This means that if Onofre were only a drugstore chain without an e-commerce operation, the integration would have been already concluded. This is really important because, as I'll mention on the next page, Onofre today generate losses that have to be quickly reverted, and we want also to minimize the distraction it caused on our structure. The quickest the integration is, the quickest we'll move ahead and go on with other things. We're also rebranding the store. Each store is already rebranded as Raia Drogasil with a CapEx of 250,000 per store. We did only a small set of stores to make sure that the look and feel is good to validate them. Now we're starting to rebrand other stores. The renovation work are undergoing. We believe by October, we may have closed some more stores, and maybe we'll have rebranded all stores to Raia Drogasil. Additionally, between August and October, we're preparing Raia and Drogasil, our team, to receive the e-commerce operation. This means preparing our distribution network, and this means preparing our e-commerce systems, because Onofre has functionalities which we can't lose. There's also something related to maintaining search relevance. There's a way to do the transaction and maintain search relevance. If it's not done this way, the whole indexation is lost and search relevance, which is very important here, will just disappear. We're preparing that. In October, by the end of October, we expect that the Onofre commerce operation will be fully absorbed by Raia Drogasil. Finally, this will allow us in November to shut down the operation, shut down the sites, shut down the systems, transferring accounting balances, and then the transaction will be basically finished. On page 17, we can discuss the economic outlook and expected synergies from this integration. I'm not allowed to talk about historic EBITDA based on the sales contract to CVS. What we have here is the projection that we have today for the Onofre operation going forward in the absence of any integration. This means that Onofre today projects an annual burn of 100 million in EBITDA. It's not a small money, but this is a money that this is a loss that we expect to reverse very quickly through the integration synergies. Our expectation here is that by the end of the year, Onofre will be in break-even. Obviously, on a consolidated basis, on the year, the profitability that Onofre will generate will be negative. But by the end of the year, Onofre should be at break-even and then starting to create value next year. Let's remember that the outlook is very favorable here because we had no acquisition price to be paid to the seller. And more importantly, we have a lot of assets in the company, that should be enough to absorb the cash pressure from the operating losses. Actually, more than enough. Our expectation is to generate a surplus, meaning that the assets that we will convert in cash or will minimize that our CapEx and so on should be enough to absorb the cash losses from the operation. And which assets are these? First, we have 124.5 million in working capital. This working capital includes excess cash and a lot of other assets with significant release potential. So for example, as we eliminate DCs, as we close stores, we will reduce inventory levels. So overall, accounting efficiency gains and counting also the excess cash already existing, we believe that we can release two-thirds to three-fourths of this amount to cash. And this should be enough to pay for any losses. This is a company that has no financial liability, absolutely clean. We also have commercial properties with an expected sales value of 30 million. The book value is even slightly higher than this, but we believe that we can sell these locations for something like 30 million. We have also existing tax assets which exceed the liabilities that we project. And we have, as I mentioned in the beginning, fixed assets in DCs, headquarters, and fulfillment centers that we can relocate to RDs, reducing future capex, like conveyor belt DCs, like gondolas in stores, things like that. And this is money in the end. And finally, we are completely protected from the existing arbitration proceeding involving Onofre, CVS, and its former owners. We have no upside or downside potential payments. Sorry, no upside or downside from the transaction. And any potential payments that Onofre will have to make are fully collateralized by the seller. Okay. And what are the main synergies here? First and foremost, revenue increase. As we rebrand all the stores to Hydro Brasil, as we leverage our systems, platform, retail execution, and universe institutional contracts, we believe these stores, they should be able to sell in line with the company average. They're not bad today. They sell around 500. The surviving ones sell around 500,000 per store. I think they could be selling north of 700,000 based on using our brands and based on improving our execution. We have also a very obvious and significant gross margin gain already quantified based on our superior buying terms. So this is really, really relevant. We'll have very strong expense dilution, actually expense reduction, by taking away the existing logistics infrastructure, the IT infrastructure, the whole corporate support area, they will simply disappear. And we will have a very interesting e-commerce business, which will be a pure play, Onofre becomes a pure play national player, a price leader leveraging our buying terms, we're able to do local deliveries on a national level using our capillarity and structure, and so on. So this is a very strategic asset for us. And finally, and this is a nice surprise, I mean, as we started knowing better the people and how Onofre operated, I mean, there are what we call reverse synergies, which are improvements that Onofre structure and people can do for RG. So, for example, Onofre has a digital marketing team that we left. We used an outside agency, and their team is much better than operating with an agency here. Onofre was successful in introducing services in stores beyond what we have done. So we are taking the example here. They do manufacturer services, which is a very interesting profitability line for them, and we also leverage that structure. they have some store signaling solutions that are better than the ones we have, and we can roll out for the whole chain. They operate their call center way better than we operate ours, and the call center leader is already the Onofre, the call center manager. And finally, we're very happy to see a very strong team in Onofre, that and we are absorbing a lot of people from Onofre to strengthen our corporate structure and to oxygenate our culture as well. So just for you to know, we started hiring new people the day we closed the Onofre transaction. We had 70 openings in the company, which we are filling through Onofre people. And we're also bringing more people because of the quality that they bring, because of skills that they bring, which, as I mentioned, will strengthen our corporate structure. In total, we're bringing 131 people from Onofre into RD. This is something like 50% of Onofre's structure, but this is not related to Onofre. It's related to improving RD execution. There is an expected investment in corporate structure between 0.05 and 0.1% of margin. This will be easily diluted in the coming year or years, but I think this will immediately strengthen our execution, and we're very happy to pursue it. So finally, we issued the debentures. We raised $300 million in an issuance with a single 8-year maturity tranche, amortized in the last 2 years, with a cost of 106.99% of the CDI. This is the cheapest corporate issuance ever done in Brazil with this 8-year maturity. We want to invite everybody who can come to Brazil to our RD Day, which will take place on October 4th in São Paulo. And then our next call will be October 29th to talk about the third quarter. And finally, we have 3 scheduled investor conferences that we are attending. So we have Santander in São Paulo. We have Morgan Stanley in London, which I'll be attending. And then we have Bradesco in New York in November, which Marcelo and Gabriel will be attending. So these were our prepared remarks. Now let's open for Q&A. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press *1 on your phone at this time, okay? If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press the # key. The first question we have is from Joseph from Banco JP Morgan. You may proceed.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Hi, Eugenio. Hi, Gabriel. Thanks for taking my question. Actually, I have like a few of them. So first of all, like in this context of competitors kind of shrinking operations or slowing down the expansion plans, here like I'd like to understand if you guys are seeing like a more benign environment for M&A. So maybe like some of those guys may have a higher willingness to merge. In this context, if you are really looking for that, like you had like an opportunistic purchase on Onofre, but eventually there are some like regional chains that would add value for the company. Then the second one goes into future margin gains, right? So as you flagged, we still have like a very young store base, and here we have a potential dilution of expenses as we mature the portfolio. My question here is if like we could be seeing the company investing a little bit of those operating gains expected into further competitiveness to retrofit that into additional growth. Thank you.
Joe, thank you for your questions. I mean, obviously, I mean, we see a competitive environment which is much more favorable now. If you look this year, every single month, we have opened ourselves more stores than all of the rest of the chains in Abrafarma. Obviously, there is some level of pain in the market. It's difficult for me to speculate on who will or will not sell or not. We are focused now on doing Onofre, and I think Onofre can provide us with a lot of expertise that maybe we can leverage in the future. So the fact that we're integrating the whole retail operation in 1 month is something very important. As we understand what the gross margin gains are, we can also project in other transactions what they could be. Same thing with expense reduction, same thing with revenue growth. So we have a good small lab here to learn about M&A, to give us references even to model future opportunities. And obviously, we have our eyes open. We are always receiving assets, potential targets to look at. But still, I mean, we have a certain level of bar that has to exist. We have to believe that whatever asset we buy, under our systems, under our brands, under our scale, can deliver a profitability in line with what we do. That's not always the case. I mean, depending on where the profitability of the company is, even if you add, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6% of gains, and I'm speculating, I'm not saying what we're getting with an offering. But let's say we had 3, 4, 5, depending where the company is, it doesn't take us to where it needs to be. So we will still be selective, but we are opening, we're looking more stuff. And I think the Onofre transaction sets a good precedent and brings a learning experience that maybe we can leverage in the future. In terms of margin gains, I mean, obviously, I think as we get back to real growth, as we have expense opportunities for dilution next year, I mean, I'm positive that next year will be a margin expansion year. Then what we do with that additional margin, if we drive it to the prices or if you're maintaining the margin, I think this is a day-to-day decision. It depends on how the markets are doing. It depends on where we are doing. Sometimes we're investing in some regions and we are divesting in other regions. So, I mean, the message is, as last year and this year, we clearly invested very significantly in prices. We are sacrificing short-term profitability, but I think it's obvious now how it improves our long-term competitors. The mindset is still here. If we need to do this again, we will do this again. But right now, we feel comfortable with our prices where they are. So under the current environment, I think we have never been more price competitive than we are today. And when prices are out of the equation for the consumer, then I think our execution shines, and then I think all the differentials that we have in terms of store look and feel, brand preference, people, and so on, experience, and so on, I think they deliver their full potential.
Perfect. Just one additional question, if I may, and here to touch in on the competitive landscape and recent expansion, right? So we have Onofre ahead of us, but in the recent past, the company entered into agreement to acquire some points of sales from the former Big Bang chain in the North region. So here, I'd like to understand, how are you seeing the competitive environment in the core market of some of the chains that were actually expanding in the Southeast region? So what I want to understand is, like, how strong they are in their core market and how you're evolving there.
Okay, I think it's difficult to individualize this discussion. What I think is that growing on a national level is not an easy thing. Each market is a different story. Coming from a brand that nobody knows into a new market is very difficult. I think when you look at Brazil, I mean, every market is now very populated with us and even other chains. So, I mean, I think what the numbers show is how difficult it is to grow on a national level at a high pace. And obviously, this is one of the things. The other thing is that every chain has to remain relevant in their market. They have to be strong, because otherwise, if a new entrant comes and a new entrant operates better, it's very easy to see a disruption. So I think the chains which will be successful in the future, the chains which will be around for the next decades, are the ones who deliver very strong execution and have a very relevant leadership in their core markets, and the ones which have found opportunities to grow in new markets in a profitable, sustainable way.
Perfect. If I may, another one. So thinking on the regulatory front, we have this provisional measure 881, the economic freedom one, that sets for some like a potential regulation change in terms of pharmacist requirements in the drug stores, and also the digital prescription system, which is something that may be integrated to your Universe PBM platform. So here, like, I'd like to understand from you guys, what are the potential gains that could arise from this provisional measure? And in a second question, initially there was a discussion about allowing OTC sales in other types of retail, particularly here, supermarkets and convenience stores. So also if you could touch upon on what, if it's a potential threat to your business or to the OTC sale, I would say. Thank you.
Sure. So I'll start with the first and talk about the second. I think there are a lot of good things being introduced. When you think about digital prescription, I think this is an advance for the market. There was a discussion of allowing virtual pharmacists. This is something that, as you know, I'm the chairman of AbraPharma. This is something that we are against. I don't think this improves care. I think this limits care, so we're against it. And in the end, it's not getting implemented. But there are other good things. For example, the economic freedom provisional measure, it allows us to open our stores any working hours. While we have in several cities local laws limiting working hours and so on. So obviously, there's still some controversy about if the local law supersedes the national law for that matter or not. It hasn't solved the problem in every single market, but it has solved the problem already in many markets. So there are a lot of good things being introduced. In terms of OTC supermarket, I mean, I think the first thing, talking as a company and also as AbraPharma, AbraPharma is pro-market. We are pro-competition. We don't defend any protectionist mechanism for anyone. Having said that, it's important to mention that the law expects that any medicine will be sold with pharmacy support. There is also the expectation that to sell medicines, I mean, there are certain licenses that must be held. So I think any company has the right of selling pharmaceutical products as long as they are in agreement with those legislations, because they have to do with customer security. OTC is a pharmaceutical product. You have in Brazil a big issue with literacy, for example. How many people can read the package of a medicine, can read the what we call in Portuguese, the bula, I don't know the name in English, the small paper that comes inside with all the technical information. So pharmacy supervision is something important. Otherwise, those products cannot, they could be reclassified, like vitamins have been, for example, from being a pharmaceutical product to being a supplement or anything like that. But I think that whichever retail format, if they have pharmacists, if they have the licenses, I think they should compete in the market. So this is one consideration. The other consideration is that OTC represents 15% of what we sell. If you look at how supermarkets have done in this industry, they have dismal market share, and their market share is going south because the purchase occasion is different. Because this is an industry with specialized execution. So how much sales will they get? I don't know. Let's do an exercise. Let's say they get a 10% market share. This is 1.5% revenue. I mean, it's not negligible, but it's not a disruptive number. And let's also assume that if these pains get introduced, it's introduced for the whole market. Where OTC for us is 15%, OTC for a small chain can be 30%, sometimes even more than that. So in the end, it's another source of pain that could be introduced to the market and that could lead to weakening of the competitive environment, and in some way we can even capture that as an offsetting benefit, for example.
Right, perfect. Thank you very much, Eugenio.
Right, thank you.
Remembering, if you have a question, please press star 1. Please wait while we collect some questions. It appears to be no further questions. Now I will turn the conference back to the company for the final remarks.
OK, Okay, so first, thank you all for attending our conference call, and thanks for our shareholders for your long-term support. This was, I think, an excellent quarter all over, in terms of sales, I think in terms of margins, in terms of cash cycle, in terms of market share. We finally see, after 2 years, mature stores again beating inflation and with very good momentum ahead. I think this is a result, first, of the price investments that we have done. As I mentioned before, we have never been more price competitive on a relative basis than we are today. This has also to do with the reversion of the store opening bubble. Today, we see way less openings and way more closures than we have ever seen. So this is also a much more benign environment for us, which has resulted in a very fast share gain and should result in faster share gain going forward as well. So we keep, I think we are in a very good position to lead the consolidation of this industry. I think our growth on a relative basis has been stronger than before. On an absolute basis, is probably catching up with numbers we saw in the past for a much lower, much smaller company back then. And finally, I think it's also important to mention the importance that digital will have in the short term as a new growth lever for the company, as a new source of relative competitive advantage, as a new source of improving the customer's experience in the store, the customer's engagement in his own healthcare journey, being more proactive, for helping us driving health promotion, health prevention. So again, we have the ambition of becoming a healthcare player, of becoming a company that helps consumers maintain their good health, not only dispensing boxes of pharmaceutical products. And I think digital, when in 1 or 2 years, I think the huge pipeline of initiatives that we have, they'll start unfolding, and I think they'll take us to a completely new space in terms of competitive positioning. I also like to highlight the fact that the integration of Onofre will bring faster growth next year, to bring value creation here. And in the end, I mean, this all has to do with the fact that our relative competitive positioning, in every way we see prices, locations, digital, it has never been stronger on a relative basis again than what we see today. And I think this can only be, we can only translate in good trends for the future. So again, thank you for our support. We remain available to meet you in conferences, roadshows, through calls or through visits to our offices. Thank you very much. And again, I'd like to renew the invitation for everybody to attend our investment day in October. So thank you very much.
Closing and disconnecting.